More content is available at our fingertips than ever before, and the amount of content grows every day. Some scholars and journalists are deeming it the golden age of content, but does more necessarily mean better? With most content being available for free, either legally or illegally, who is getting paid for their work? Common Air is investigating our golden age of content to see who's creating, who's getting paid, and what is being seen, heard, and experienced online. Today we are investigating the music industry. We're talking with John Hornack. John was the co-owner and head producer of BMF Studios in Toronto. He now lives in Calgary, where he composes music and is a producer, engineer, and technical consultant at Oddities Studios. Thanks for talking with us. My first question is about financial sustainability. Do you see there being any sustainable business model for musicians to make a living off their music, or is it something you will always have to do at a loss?
Unless you've cracked into that, how do I put it? Unless you've broken into the major recording industry, you don't have much of a chance of making a sustainable income. Even at the top end of independent acts, you're making, you know, maybe 30 grand a year per member, probably less, likely way less. But, you know, there are stories of success, but they're few and far between. And the vast majority of even those major label acts are left in debt when they're done their service to the label.
You personally started to make music and record music when the shift from not being able to, you know, easily share your music to being able to put your music up online and have people download it quickly and easily started to happen. What were some of the things you saw really change in the music industry? And did you see people's expectations change from being willing to pay for music to then just expecting it to be free?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily, because most of the musicians at the same time saw the internet as a big open playing field so that you could get your music to people. Because during that shift, it was a lot of money to produce a record and to get it mastered and to press it to CD and to get it to the public. You were looking, and you got to remember that the hugest part of all of this, a lot of people are like, well, it's making the record, but the biggest part of all of that is promotion. The promotion costs usurp all of the production costs. So it's almost 3-to-1, like one is production cost and, you know, free to promotion. So when you're making a CD, it was exciting for people to kind of, you know, connect with fans and try to get their music out there to the public. But even the production costs were more than most any band could bear. Studio time back then at a good studio, we were charging $500 a day, but you could easily have gone to phase one and paid $2,200 a day for their big Neve board. So musicians usually having jobs working at a record store or what have you, making minimum wage, there's no way they could afford that. There were a lucky few, like, you know, Three Days Grace, Billy Talent, those kind of bands that were in the rehearsal factories that got a lucky break. But I think you find that, you know, yeah, they did pretty well, but it's not like they were making more than a lawyer or a doctor or, you know, it's nothing you could sustain for the rest of your life.
Well, it just seems that at the dawning of the internet and file sharing, there was this sense that what was truly good or great would sort of rise to the top of popularity, but that doesn't necessarily seem to have been the case. So what do you think?
Usually the most important acts, I'll rephrase that. Usually the acts that have the money behind them are the ones that people find out about. It's all a game of promotion. The more money that you can put it in the hands of the radio stations, to put it on the air, to put it in the stores, to make a visual representation in the public about it, that's how you're going to get people interested in it. You know, there's the odd kind of breakout star, like I guess Skrillex would be kind of there, and Medion, Lord. But even those acts have a huge amount of promotion behind them. As soon as somebody sees that they can make a buck in the music industry, they're going to try to grab that, because, you know, it's so few and far between. If you're a record label, even, you know, an independent record label, you're taking your money and you're betting your money on a product, and you're betting that somebody is going to, you're going to sell units. Well, people aren't buying CDs anymore. Really, they're buying singles from iTunes. Every time you sell a single on iTunes, 30 cents or so of that goes to Apple, and then you're kind of left with the rest. The record label can make, you know, another 35, 40 cents, and then the artist is left with 20 cents at the end of the day. So, yeah, that breakdown might be a little inaccurate, but it's pretty close to that. You're not making a ton of money. Nobody's really making a ton of money anymore. You take a look at the recording studios as well. A lot of the major ones have closed or can barely pay their bills because you can produce your music at home now. And really what it comes down to is people aren't interested in production quality anymore. It's like a rapid fire media explosion where you're kind of left to dig through the minefield of, you know, good content and poor content. And, you know, mediocrity is king and kind of always has been in music and in film. So, yeah, there's some good product out there, but if you take a look at the charts for the past 40 years, you know, you're going to find a lot of bad music. You're going to find a lot of bad movies.
You mentioned how a lot of the bigger studios are now struggling to pay their bills. And ever since there's this move to being able to record music just on your home computer, but you, as a producer, do you notice there's a difference in quality or sound from this move from the studio space to the home computer?
Yeah, David and I had oddities that talked about that a lot. You're losing a lot of sonic depth, perception, but a major thing that you're actually losing is innovation. When you don't have an income stream coming into a technological-based business, there's no room to innovate. So if there's no money, people aren't going to be creating new products. Mm-hmm. And even though it's easier to create music, it doesn't mean that music is going to, how do I put it? It's not like music is necessarily going to grow by leaps and bounds or innovate by leaps and bounds because the materials that they're using are pretty weak. A computer is a pretty powerful thing, but it lacks it. In sonic capability to a big SSL console or a Neve console, a Studer 2-inch. When you're making a record, a lot of times and you're working in that medium, you're struggling to hit sort of a sonic landmark. And you can't make a record on a $2,000 computer with a good ADD converter that's going to sound like a record that was recorded on a $1 million console. Mm-hmm. It's just an impossible feat.
Well, earlier this year, there was a lot of discussion in the press about how vinyl sales have gone up, especially when the Daft Punk album came out. There seemed to be a lot of people who wanted to buy that album on vinyl. And it's not just older people buying the vinyl. You see people in their 20s and their 30s. And then specifically with Daft Punk's album, they went into the studio to really hone their sound and create something sort of full sounding. And you can hear the difference, I think, with the fact that they did take the time to go into the studio. Do you see any of this as maybe being a shift in the music industry?
That's a small market, and you're talking about, even though it's great that vinyl sales have gone up, it's really expensive for the average band or musician to press a good quality vinyl record. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about Daft Punk, and that's a huge act that's got a decade of fans behind them. Nowadays, it's going to be hard for a band to sustain that amount of popularity for that amount of time. And while I give Daft Punk, you know, kudos for working and trying to make the best sounding album that they can, the reality is that the vast majority of the market lacks the income or the capabilities to kind of strive for that.
Do you see that, though, as maybe being a detriment to the music industry? Because we often like to think that talent is just sort of a flash of an idea, and then you go and you create something amazing. But the more you really look into different artists and the way that they create, it takes years of focus and training to really get to the point where they create a lot of the pieces that we believe are masterpieces, whether it be in painting or photography or music. And if an artist isn't really given the time to grow and experiment, could it possibly lead to some stagnation in music? Or perhaps we will just miss hearing really great pieces of art that we could have heard if artists were given the opportunity to really focus in on their skills.
No, it's true. And people want immediate results and success in music, more so probably than any other art form. I was listening to an interview with Metallica the other day, and they were talking about how back in the day, they had this little tour bus, and they'd be driving around all over the United States and all over Europe, and they loved Denny's in the States and other restaurants because they would have an open salad bar. So one guy would buy a plate of salad bar, the other three guys would sit at the table, and then one by one, they'd go up to the salad bar and eat. And they asked James Hetfield, they said, well, you know, when were you going to get a normal job? Like, when was it going to be enough? And his answer was never. It didn't matter if they were playing to three people for the rest of their lives, they were going to keep playing. You don't really see that anymore.
Right.
You don't see that anymore because live music, to a large extent, has also died off. You remember, like, in the 80s and 90s, if you went to Crocs and Rolls or the In Town or any of the bars around town, there was either cover bands playing or there were original bands playing. You don't really see that anymore. You see a lot of bad DJs or pay-to-play situations at a lot of clubs that kind of mimic the Sunset Strip vibe of L.A. in the 80s. You see that in Calgary, you see that in Toronto, you see that in Vancouver, you see that in Montreal at some clubs. So bands have to put together some income to even play and end up losing money. Being a touring musician for years and kind of traveling all throughout the East Coast and all around Canada, you see it's almost impossible to make a living going on the road because what bars kind of expect to pay you and what the standard of paying a local Canadian band, it's a really low watermark. You're not really able to pay for gas, food, and lodging. So you're able, you're just making that mark, or you're constantly losing money being on the road as a small band.
Well, you're a musician yourself and a composer, and you tend to record your music and then put it up online for people to download, either to pay what they can or they can download it for free. And realizing that you probably won't make a lot of money for your music, you still create it and put it out there. So why do you think you still make music?
Because I can't stop doing it. It's something that, even though I make a small stipend from playing live, I have a good amount of success, at least promotionally, from doing it. And I was going to do it anyway, so people might as well hear it.
Well, on the other side of the coin, with studios sometimes suffering from, people recording so much at home, why do you decide to still work at somewhere like Oddities?
Well, Oddities is a unique situation in recording studios in Canada, or North America or the world for that matter. Oddities is based around David Keane's idea of building a living museum of recording equipment so that future generations can understand the processes we got to and the innovations we got to today. So he has the tape machines that recorded The Wall and Fleetwood's Mac Rumors, the console that recorded Joy Division's Level Tear Us Apart. He owns Mellotron, so the original Mellotrons, just original Moogs, everything that you see as stepping stones for the creation of modern music is represented in that studio. So when I met David and I saw the studio, I realized that a lot of people in Calgary may not totally understand what he had there, and because there's not a lot of recording engineers, there are producers in town, but I totally got where he was going with it, and I thought it was too good of an opportunity to pass up, and I had to at least work in there to understand, for myself to understand the stepping stones.
In terms of new music being produced, is there anything that's making you really excited lately?
I'm interested in new kind of tools to create music, possibilities in engineering and programming that make it interesting. Right now, I'm really a believer of this convenience is king model. Like, really, the thing about the music industry that people keep forgetting is that, they've used art and music as a way to kind of attack privacy. So they said, you know, here you need to act against these pirates that are stealing this music and are stealing these movies because these artists need to get paid. Well, the reality is that, you know, a small amount of those people were making money anyways, and the vast majority of the market was living in debt.
Right.
So you weren't really helping the mass of musicians or of filmmakers, and really you were just bolstering big business. Now you have a situation where really we've let the bad guys under the door, taking away privacy via the NSA. You're going to see the same in Canada. You've seen the same in Europe. So really, I think the most important thing is that these have to be free. The arts are a form of communication. Previously, before musicians made money, you know, they were speaking as either a voice of the church, a voice of the state, or as a voice of revolt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think music is always most interesting as a voice of revolt. So if anything makes me excited about the music industry, it's the capability of this mass of talent to be able to speak about the injustices of kind of the future and work as an art form that puts those messages out there.
Right, that's great. I like that, very sort of an optimistic way of thinking about how music can grow. I was just thinking that, do you ever have a concern that if people aren't able to make any money off of the content they produce, that perhaps music won't be able to push as far forward or as hard against, you know, the corporations and the government that may be trying to silence them when they can't really eat off of what they're producing? And then, you know, if they do get a little bit of buzz, then they might be owned by Coca-Cola or Apple Computers or some such corporation. Do you not think that content producers should be able to, you know, pay their bills off of the content that they create?
Oh, no, totally, they do. It's just a matter of, you know, it's not for me to, and I would love to find a new model that finds success for businesses. And I talk to other musicians, and we're constantly, and producers and engineers, because you spend so much time creating this art, you'd like to make some money from it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lotto, you know, it's a lottery game. You know, The Weeknd out of Toronto, he put his first three EPs online and then garnered some success. You have this whole kind of intelligentsia blogging community that are the tastemakers of the day, but they keep replicating the same thing over and over again. So we're stuck in this kind of pseudo-terrible 80s cycle of pop rock that... You know, in this whole tape community as well, that's just, it's going backwards. We're really kind of regressing into a younger state of ourselves. As musicians, when we're doing that, you're not really looking forward. And to some extent, the modern aesthetic of indie rock and of musicians playing in a band is like a tape recorder with one microphone in the room, and it sounds terrible. But with those songs, you know, live on if they were recorded well. I think probably not.
Right.
So it's almost like a lot of modern music is afraid of success or is afraid of being judged, so they purposely put on this terrible facade to kind of cover up their inability to create new art.
Well, I want to take this opportunity to thank you for giving such great answers and thoughtful answers to our questions. My last question is, why does music matter?
I think music matters in the same reason that I kind of alluded to earlier, is that music has always been... Music works on levels that other art forms do not, in that you can't sing a painting, and you can recite literature, but you can't recite the whole book to somebody. But, you know, the power of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony... people would sing that kind of, you know, just those couple notes over and over again, and it would move all across Europe, and people would wait, you know, without even hearing the symphony. People kind of knew the symphony before they even got there because it was recited to them around. It has the same power as language, so it's innate to us. Before we learn to speak a single word, we learn the basic chromatic scale of music. That's how we learn how to speak. So it's innate in us. It's always going to live. The question is, how do people make money at it? How do people make a living at it? My answer to that would kind of be, nobody made money at it until Beethoven. Beethoven was the first person who said, I'm not going to work for the church. I'm not going to work for the regencies. I'm going to go out there and make my own money. So, you know, from Beethoven to the current day, we kind of have to assess how we look at, you know, that business, how we look at that industry, how we kind of cut out the people that don't deserve to be in there in the first place, and how we make our own income. Musician, the content creators have to take a step back and go, I'm not just a musician, I'm a small business owner. How do I make my small business profitable? How do I get it to as many people? How do I make my product intrinsic to their lives? How do I make it so that they need to buy my product and want to see me live? And furthermore, they have to kind of take a look at the end of the year and say, is this sustainable for me? And if it's not sustainable, how do I make it so that it is?
John. Once again, we have been interviewing John Hornack, who currently works as a producer, engineer, and technical consultant at Oddity Studio in Calgary. If you'd like to learn more about John or hear some of his music, you can go to woodsongs.ca. This has been Common Air, produced at CFMH in St. John, New Brunswick. We will now go out with some music by John Hornack.